Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Richie Neal, let's talk about Ian Paisley. I know that you've been our guy on Ireland all along. You can tell us more about what's going on there than ever. This guy dies now. Hero or heel?
Well, I think it's, like many cases, in between. I dealt with him for many, many years. The relationship was stormy. And then about 4 years ago, I welcomed him to the Capitol. And Nancy Pelosi actually came to the luncheon that I hosted for him at the Capitol. And I hosted it while he and Martin McGuinness sat at the head table.
So why did he turn around?
Well, I think that there were a couple of things that happened. If I can just give you a quick tutorial. One of the things was, clearly, that we all celebrate the life of Nelson Mandela for good reason. But we should never miss the point that he needed a partner, and de Klerk was his partner.
Right.
And in South Africa, when de Klerk said it was over, that collapsed apartheid and the idea of a government that was run by the minority. In the north of Ireland, Ian Paisley's vitriolic rhetoric, his anti-Catholic bigotry, the things that he said in many cases were unprintable. And again, a very stormy relationship and a number of very difficult engagements I had with him personally. And the last time that he greeted me outside of Leinster House, he shook my hand. And I thought that there was a change in the air. The Irish government for years made the argument that we in Congress, through the Friends of Ireland, that we needed to promote the moderate Social Democratic Labour Party in the North. And the British government would say to us, you need to promote the moderate Protestant Party in the North, the UUP, the Ulster Unionist Party. Sinn Féin, the more nationalistic party in the North, they would argue that they were going to deal with the face of unionism no matter who it was. And Ian Paisley completely outmaneuvered, as the head of the Democratic Unionist Party, completely outmaneuvered the moderates, and he in the end made the deal. And the idea that he would stand outside of Leinster House and announce that he was an Irishman and was stunning. And most of us at that time could have fallen off a chair to hear some of the things that he said. And I'm of the belief that in history, when people do the right thing, we need to say so. He finally, an individual whose career was spent on saying no at the big moment with the Good Friday Agreement, he said yes.
So here's the curveball. Scotland, we're about to see a referendum. What are the implications for Ireland and Northern Ireland?
Well, it's hard to say. As you can see, the parties in the North have pretty much refrained from commentary, although the Orange Order has traveled to Scotland, Edinburgh, in support of unity. The Orange Order in the North of Ireland and the Orange Order in Scotland, they are really kinsmen. They have a kinship that dates back generations because the plantations that were embraced largely were what were called Scots-Irish. And they settled in America through the Carolinas and Tennessee. And I think that their contributions are well known across the globe. And I think that in this instance here, that it certainly, if Scotland votes to leave, it will destabilize parts of the North. And many of us have adhered to a basic principle through the course of a career. We hope that we will see a united Ireland, where the 32 counties will finally be together. But I think that trying to read much into this at the moment is only going to cause the unionists, if Scotland succeeds, you will see the unionists in the North perhaps become even more intransigent as they worry about their identity being erased. I mean, the genius of the Good Friday Agreement was, if you want to be Irish, you can be Irish. If you want to be British, you can be British. And you can define what that Britishness means. And I think that the campaign that I participated in for 30 years was really about the idea of people being what they wanted to be.
Now, as my Celtic professor, you are, explain to me why the Scotch want to get out.
Well, the Scots currently are going through an economic renaissance, and oil revenues have generated a great deal of new wealth. They also are nationalistic people. They've been together for 300 years with the Act of Union. And the truth is that they have felt always as though they were dismissed by the English. And the Scots, again, are very successful people. The question for them is, do they do better economically if they dissolve the Union with Great Britain, or does it hurt them? And my hunch is that it's really too close to call. But Scottish nationalism is a powerful phenomena. And I think that an individual like Alex Salmon, who at different intervals was really treated as though nobody took him seriously, is now about to perhaps, even if he doesn't win on Thursday, I can tell you this, the Brits are going to bend over backwards to give more power to the Scottish Nationalist Party and certainly to the idea, even if they lose, to a more independent Scotland. And I think the Irish might be able to emulate that and move perhaps toward an intermediary position of a confederation across the north with the Republic of Ireland.
Mm. Doesn't that negate some of, if you want to be British, you can be British, and if you want to be Irish?
You know, yeah. It's a very difficult issue because I think that in the north of Ireland, the Irish Catholic obviously has bigger families. They are, at this stage, much more serious about education. And now many of the unionist community members, they actually immigrate to Scotland. They actually immigrate to Great Britain. Their numbers do not grow the way the nationalists grow. In four of the six counties now across the north of Ireland, you have a nationalist majority. And it's just a matter of time before demography takes care of that.
Wow. Interesting. Fascinating. So casinos in Massachusetts, the people have asked for the right to re-vote. What do you expect to happen?
Well, actually, I think that the individuals who support Governor Patrick's position, and that is that the community ought to be able to decide what they want, and I think that that's the one that is going to prevail based upon some of the polling that I've seen with 7 weeks to go. That number really has not changed much. And I understand. I don't think the casinos are an economic generator of great new wealth. And I think that they do prey upon people that are very poor. But I think individuals who would argue that much of that revenue now goes to Connecticut and goes to New York and goes to other places, I think that that argument ought to be heard as well. And to be candid, I also think that Springfield, in this instance, they've put together a process that has stood up underneath the magnifying glass. I think that'll be the case in Everett, East Boston, and Revere in the battle as well. But I think that for those communities that have already had an election, in fact, Springfield, I think, has had three, I think that Governor Patrick's position is the sound one. There is a process in place, and that ought to be the one that stands.
But what if people vote, no, we don't want this at all?
Well, then it's over. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that conclusive. It's no longer a debating point. It will be over.
Richie Neal, of course, you know Springfield better than anyone, a former mayor and a guy who represents that whole place. What are you hearing? I mean, is there a level of anger? What are people who live
there? No, it's actually, I think it's been fairly calm. I don't sense that. I think that the mayor and his staff, they continue to make very strong arguments for the casino, and I think that they're riding the backs of three elections, as I've indicated, and I think that organized labor, the AFL-CIO, has taken a very vigorous position in support of constructing the casino, and I only caution that I just don't think that the casino is the answer to economic development. I will say that I listened to some of the candidates for governor, and they were all going to come up with an answer. Well, I must tell you that I think that those answers that they gave were fairly elusive.
One of our favorite people, if not our favorite person to talk to on the Congressional Corner, is Richard Neal, Richie Neal, Massachusetts 1st District Democrat, in office since 1989 and one of the smartest people I've ever known. Richie, thank you so much for
giving
us
your
valuable time.
Thank you, Alan. Always delightful to be with you.